Welcome to the European CME Forum podcast. European CME Forum is a not-for-profit organization that promotes multi-channel discussion on matters relating to European and global CME CPD. My name is Eugene Pozniak. I'm the program director of European CME Forum. In this episode, I'm in conversation with Lisa Sullivan, Managing Director of InVivo Academy, and also the guest editor of the 2023 special collection in the Journal of CME, JECME. The focus of today's episode is this year's JECME special collection on expanding the voices in CME CPD.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi there, Eugene. How are you?
Yeah, all good, thanks. Happy New Year. It's great to see you again.
Can't believe another one's come around, to be honest.
Indeed. And it's great that we have the opportunity to meet today. So thanks very much for joining us on this podcast. But with the new year, we have the new special collection. Of course, you've agreed to be the guest editor this year. But we'd just like to take this opportunity to discuss with you what your hopes and aspirations are for the collection this year. Now, to start off, perhaps for those people who may not know you, can you say a few words about yourself and your work in CME?
Okay, well, obviously Australian. I'm sure everybody can detect that from the accent. Sorry about that. But basically, I've been in the CME world for many years, but mostly in the Australian context, because Australia has a very sophisticated CME system and has done for many, many years. And so I've been working very closely with the Royal College of GPs here in Australia and have been an accredited provider for several decades now. But I really became much more involved in the sort of global CME space in about 2008, 2009. So, you know, really, I suppose I've only been in the global space for probably 15 years. I started my life as a nurse after school. I then did a marketing degree. And interesting enough, I did my master's degree only a couple of years ago, and I actually focused on a systematic review of comparing face-to-face versus online versus hybrid learning. So, I'm really interested in evolving the education space from a theoretical perspective as well as a practical perspective. And I think certainly, although we're, you know, at the other end of the world, we certainly do global programs. We do a lot of work in Asia and Australia, obviously, because that's the region in which we live and work. So I think it's fair to say that I'm not perhaps as experienced as people like Kathy Chappell by any means, but I've certainly had a very broad and varied CME CPD experience.
No, that's fantastic. And it's great. Thank you for explaining that, because it really shows that your breadth and depth of experience and knowledge in CME is great to have as a guest editor of the special collection. Thank you.
Terrific. Well, I have to say, I'm really very excited to take on this role this year. Obviously, I've been very involved in the special collections in the past. I actually had one of our own articles published a couple of years ago. So, the ability to be really at the forefront of suggesting recommendations and taking papers from people, I think, is going to be something that I'm really quite chuffed about, to be honest. I think one of the most interesting things this year is that if we think about the ECF last year, we really had a lot of patient inclusion. You know, we talked a lot about diversity and equality, but we didn't necessarily talk a lot about how patients are very involved and what are the different ways in which we can involve different voices within CME and CPD. So that's the thing that I'm most looking forward to this year, is the broad brush of where do these different voices come from, how are they involved, what's the input that they've had, and have they had any great impact, whether it's a patient, whether it's an interprofessional environment, whether it's team-based, you know, whether it's the regulators becoming more involved or the appraisers. What is it about different voices that has made specific CME and CBD programs more efficient and more effective. That's what I'm really quite excited about.
That's great. Yeah. And it was the board meeting that we had last November. So each year, the journal board members meet at the European CME Forum meeting. And of course, yeah, last year's 15th annual European CME Forum in Barcelona, we really had a deep dive into the patient voice, as you say. And it was interesting when we were having that meeting, just all those themes that came out, because it really sparked people's thought process. And what's clear is that in the world of CME, CPD and education in whatever way, it's not just education for clinicians by clinicians, or in the case outside of the US, by physicians for physicians, because so much of CME seems to be focused on doctors themselves. But just that broadening of the topic, and it's not just the professional organizations that might help with developing the education, but yeah, all the allied health professions and just wherever data can come from, or where with the skills. And it was, yeah, it was just really interesting in that conversation that we had when you started sort of coming out with all those details, that it's just really important to have this kind of conversation with these different voices.
Yes, absolutely. And I think also one of the things that certainly seemed to come out at the ECF in Barcelona was that there were lots of people who had concerns around any sort of education that might have been outside of that clinician-to-clinician environment. You know, perhaps they haven't had the experience in doing it. I know I was involved in a workshop where we were talking about how do we include the patient voice in both the development and the deployment of our education. And I got a very strong impression that there were lots of people in the room who really had no idea how to go about looking at the way they plan and then deliver their education in a different way or with a different audience that is involved in the development. And I think that's one of the key things about this special edition, a special collection, is that we really want to see the entirety of all the different voices that can and should be involved. And even if they haven't been involved, you know, we could have short articles or commentaries on why people haven't done that in the past. What are some of the barriers that they've experienced in trying to include different voices? I think this special collection gives us an enormous opportunity to really look more broadly outside of that clinician-to-clinician environment that we've all been doing for so many years.
That's great. And and I suppose organizations can have a think as well about the kind of projects they've run, whether it's what we'd have referred to as interprofessional education as well, team-based learning.
Yes.
And you've already mentioned sort of the diversity, equity and inclusion side of things as well, which again, on reflection, people can actually see that how their education is evolving, what kind of trends they're picking up as well, and if they could be an interesting article to submit for this special collection this year.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I would really hope that we will see is some papers coming from health professionals outside of just doctors. I know that JECME gets the odd article on pharmacists and nurses and so on, but we don't really see an enormous number. And I think if the special collection is focusing on the voices in CME and CPD, even outside of that interprofessional environment, the opportunity to look at different things that are being done with pharmacists and or with nurses and or with allied health professionals would be fantastic. So I'm hoping that when we start marketing this special collection, that we will have an opportunity to get these non-clinician voices involved so that we can really see some of the stuff that's going on in these other allied professionals.
Sure. Yeah. And any kind of valuable lessons in educational design.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That can be applied to other areas as well is of huge interest to the journal. So yeah, it would be great to see articles from groups that we can all learn from in some way.
Yep. One of the things that I know I would like to see from a personal perspective is the concept of the team-based learning, because I think you know, there's no doubt that CME and CPD, everybody in the medical education space, we're all talking about the importance of team-based learning. But I think it's actually quite a bit more challenging than lots of people realize or recognize. And it would be fantastic if we got experienced people from that team-based learning environment to actually submit to this special collection to tell us, you know, what do they do differently? How do they overcome some of the issues that are involved in team-based learning? From my perspective, it would be fantastic if we got those sorts of articles as well, because I see from an undergraduate and graduate medical education space, the whole team-based learning is really very experienced and I think doing very well. But when we get out into the CME and CPD space, I'm not so sure that it's as proficient as it should be.
Yes, yeah. No, and that's something, especially coming out of the COVID lockdowns period, we've seen undergraduate education being turned upside down as everyone's reflected on how the students learn. Professional development, the Royal Colleges in the UK and various medical societies around the world are revising the way that the training's taking place. And you're absolutely right. Yeah, once we get to that CME, CPD space, have we seen many changes in that, or are people sort of looking forward to going back to how we did things before? Which is really frustrating to see, considering that so many other parts, and that's just sort of in the medical education side, but you know, our whole lives have been turned upside down. It would be great to see what can we be doing in the CME space to encompass these changes and implement new practices. So it would be lovely to hear this and to push the envelope so that the accreditors accept these new ways and that education companies can actually offer our learners the kind of education that they're seeing in other sectors as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, I often wonder whether, is it possible for us to look outside of the health professions to look at how team-based learning is actually managed? Because I think there are professions where team-based learning is very common and much more familiar than perhaps we find it. So that's my own personal thing. You know, I want to learn more about team-based learning, and I'm hoping that we will get articles that give us insights, recommendations, barriers, challenges, how they've overcome those challenges, so that it does in fact give all of us a much broader idea about how to get started. I think that's really the key.
Sure, yeah. And and something else we actually discussed in that meeting was sort of the use of big data and getting sources of data and information for needs assessments and so identifying where the gaps are. But have you had any thoughts about where we can...
Yeah, well, that's the $60,000 question, isn't it, really? There's no doubt that we're all trying to find the answer to how we get the data that we need, particularly for our needs assessments, without having to reinvent the wheel all the time. And I think it would be wonderful if we had suggestions from experienced CME and CPD professionals about how we could somehow enable that big data to be more available, to be more affordable. You know, I think it's fine if you're in the US and you're dealing with US audiences and you've got millions and millions of learners. But if you're in my part of the world, where we don't have millions and millions of learners, the data often doesn't exist. So it's very difficult to find the information that we need so that our needs assessments are specific. So it would be fabulous if somebody actually, you know, came to us with recommendations of how we might make that available data, how we could improve the health information systems so that it's available, and also how could it become more affordable? Because certainly from my own experience, one of the challenges I find is the sheer cost that we have to incur to get hold of that data, which is so important for our planning.
Yeah, and it's something for years we've talked about in the European CME Forum meetings, just about the health outcomes data, the patient level data that exists in every hospital, in every healthcare system, but it just seems to be down the other end of the corridor and very rarely feeds into the education that impacts patient care. So yeah, it's how can we join these dots? And it would be fantastic if people can actually come up with some examples of how this huge pool of data that exists that's being analyzed can be incorporated into CME.
Yeah. And also, I think just purely from our CME CPD space, when you consider the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of needs assessments that are being done by providers all over the world, all the time, wouldn't it be fantastic if we had a central repository where all that stuff went, so that when we actually have to do a new needs assessment, we could go to the repository for a fee and download all the last two needs assessments on atopic dermatitis. I mean, wouldn't it be fantastic? Because at the moment, we all reinvent the wheel every time, or we utilize the data that we've had from the last needs assessment we did, but we don't have access that is easily accessible. So it would be great, you know, if somebody could just invent a system where we can all dump all the data that we have so that everybody else can get access to it. That would be my absolute goal.
Yeah, that would be great.
Maybe somebody could suggest give us an article or a brief communication on exactly that, how that might actually be done. I think that'd be jolly marvelous.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and I think that some national systems actually look at that kind of thing, where the Ministry of Health actually collates this data and gives advice or direction as to what they will fund by way of CME for that year. Yeah, we've got a couple of countries in mind that sort of does that, which might seem a little bit sort of heavy-handed, but it does answer that kind of question, that there is a central repository of data, of information that actually informs where there is the real need for education.
Yeah, it's the goal, I think, because certainly in if I look at some of the countries in Asia where the data just simply doesn't exist. And so it's really, really challenging, because nobody, the groups and the hospitals and even the health systems don't necessarily have the funding to be able to publish everything that they do. And so the data is really, really hard to get hold of. And it would be a terrific turnaround if everything like that became much more available.
Great. Yeah. And this is also the big picture kind of side of things. And of course, what's also incredibly interesting is what happens on the local level, or within a single institute or hospital or practice, and how education is carried out there amongst a small handful of people. And we've had some interesting papers in the past about this, but I think it would be great to have things on that team level, the just what is the current challenge in that area, geographical area. So it's not just big picture stuff on the national level, but it's also on a much local level as well, that it would be good to get some papers on that.
And I think one of the challenges that we face there on that local level issue is the funding for actually enabling that data collection and study, because often if you look at the grant system that most of us are involved with through pharmaceutical grants, you know, they're often less likely to do local stuff than they are to do much broader stuff. So it's actually quite challenging sometimes to get funding to do smaller localized studies. And so unless a health system or a hospital or a university is paying for that, then that sort of study just doesn't get published. So I think that's unfortunate in itself. And it would be marvelous if the pharmaceutical industry, as part of their grants, were able to look a little more broadly on smaller, more localized components that would also add to that cachet of data that we all so desperately need.
Yes. Yeah. And that's true. There's quite a few grants now stipulate that the work for a large educational activity must be written up and published in some way, whether it's an article in JECME or a poster at a congress, or just an article in a relevant publication. But yeah, the education that happens day to day, maybe informal education as well. Mm. How does that take place? It might not be funded by whether it's a pharmaceutical company or by the hospital. Yeah, if there are examples, and of course, one of the formats you've stipulated is that, you know, people can write a brief communication, just as long as there's presumably a bit of data there or something that someone else can learn from, it's worth submitting to the journal, and this would be of interest to our readership, certainly.
Look, I think the concept of the brief communication, which you know, is not a monster research article, and we're talking sort of 2,000 to 2,500 words for a brief communication. I think that's easy to put together. It can be done relatively quickly if the data already exists. You know, we're not asking for a peer review article in that respect, like a research article. So I'm hoping that we will actually see more submissions that are on the smaller side, so that we can have more of them, because I think that, you know, the more the better, because it will enable us to think more deeply around all of these different voices that are involved and the things that we aren't necessarily doing today that we should be doing tomorrow.
Great. And of course, people can submit an even shorter article by way of a comment.
Yeah, it's interesting because I actually reviewed a comment last year, and I was really impressed with the ability of the group to be able to put what they managed to put into 1,000 words, because 1,000 words is not a lot of words when you think about it. And so I think that the comment, as we call it, or the commentary, is a really nice addition to the formats that the Special Collection has, because it means that we can look at a specific component of something, or an aha moment. You know, you've done a program and you learn just one little thing that you hadn't necessarily learned before that was really interesting from a CME perspective. That's the sort of thing you can write up very nicely in a comment and submit that for review. So I certainly hope we do get several of those.
Excellent. Yeah. And these are two of the article types that you'll be accepting for the Special Collection. So the comment up to 1,000 words, the brief communication up to 2,500 words, and of course the big research articles, which are 4,000 words for a full detailed report, would be submitted as a research article. And we should mention as well that, I mean, JECME is an open access journal, which means that there's no charge for the readers to go in to read these articles, which really helps with dissemination of scholarly knowledge. But someone does have to pay at some stage. So there is an article processing charge, which is normal for open access publications. And it's on a sliding scale between comment and research article. There's full details on the website. So we'll give the link in the show notes of where to find this information. But what's really important to note is that submissions from low and middle income countries get reductions in these fees, and also institutes themselves have relationships with publishers, and if they have a relationship with Taylor and Francis, etc., they're free of an APC charge in the first place. So there's more direction on the website. We'll have links in the show notes for that, so we'll try and keep the financial burden as low as possible. What's really important is we would like to help authors as much as possible to get their work published and get it out there into the community.
And might I suggest, Eugene, obviously I've published in a variety of journals over the years, and the APC for JECME is not a huge cost, even when you're not in some of the lower income areas where you get the reduction. So it's not a huge charge. And I think for the opportunity for us to get our work published and have it available openly to the world is really a fantastic thing. So people shouldn't be put off by that small charge that's required, definitely.
Great. So is there anything else we should cover?
Well, the only thing I would like to say is that I'd also just like to do a bit of a call out to my editorial team for this special collection. I'm really really excited about the team because Kathy Chappell, who was obviously the guest editor for last year's special collection, she has agreed to be involved this time. And of course, Kathy, as we all know, is, you know, one of the greats when it comes to all of this stuff. So I'm very happy to have her. But what I've done is that I've got six people, and I've got three Americans and three Europeans, so that we've got a good sort of brush across the different accreditation systems, particularly. Some of them are from universities, some of them are from commercial businesses, some of them are from societies. So, you know, it's a really good team. I'm assuming that their names will also be on the website, or does that not happen?
Oh, absolutely. No, we'll have them in the website.
Great.
So people know who they are, and also contact details so that they can get in touch with you, and you can put relevant people in touch with each other as well if anyone wants guidance on how to put together papers.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Because the other thing also that I thought was really lovely was that when this was all announced at the ECF last year in Barcelona, I already had two people from the ECF meeting come up to me and say that they'd like to help be reviewers. So, you know, I thought that was fantastic, because I think getting reviewers is always the challenge when everybody is really, really busy. So I think we've got a really strong team. I'm very excited to work with them. We're having our first editorial team meeting at the end of this month. So we're looking pretty much ready to go.
Excellent. So no, that's fantastic to hear. And also that you're being approached by people to be reviewers and to join you on your committee as well. As you say, it's quite a challenge to get people together, but we're finding with these special collections that it seems to focus people's minds on a specific issue. I mean, as you're describing right from the beginning of this episode, you know, that is very broad, but actually when one starts thinking about one's own activity in CME, it does actually become quite specific, and it gets quite exciting that you can say, oh, actually I can join these dots, and then ultimately hopefully get something published in JECME with this special collection.
Yeah, absolutely. So one can only hope that we'll get lots of submissions, and I hope that we'll get them across the board from the point of view of research articles through to a comment. And I think that one of the key things for everybody to remember is that if they need any help, or if they do have an idea and they're not quite sure how to turn that into an article, please reach out, because I think there are so many of us on this editorial team that are very experienced at publishing and have been in the CME world for a million years, that we can really add value to help people to publish if they've never actually published before. So that's, I'm hoping that we'll get some newbies as well, because of the nature of the collection that we have.
Excellent. So all those details are on the website, and any further information about submissions as well. So it's important to submit through the Taylor & Francis process. There'll be links on how to do that. The website also has all the links to the previous special collection, so you can see examples of previous submissions and the types of articles that are great with the journal. And of course, there's a deadline, which is in July this year. So we're just setting the deadline, really, to be fair to you, Lisa, and the team, so that, there'll be a burst of activity and for the journal to publish the articles before the end of the year, and especially to have a session during the 16th annual European CME Forum in November, taking place in The Hague, 8th to the 10th of November, where you will also have a session there to, depending on the submissions you have, to actually invite some authors to take part in a review of the publications you've approved for publication.
Oh, terrific. That's a great idea. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the opportunity for us to really talk about what's been submitted and the value and the level of the submissions, you know, how strong they are, how perhaps some of the challenges that people have faced. I think that's a really terrific thing, because the more we talk about publishing and sharing the data that we collect from our education, the better we're all going to be in the long run. We are a community of practice. We need to be working together and sharing together. So I shall look forward to be able to bring a few people together and have a bit of a session at the 16th ECF. That'll be fabulous.
and an incentive for the authors as well. So it's not just being published somewhere, but to be able to actually present it and discuss it with medical societies, pharmaceutical companies, regulators, accreditors, education organizations as well. So it makes it a real sort of cutting edge session for our community, as you say.
Great stuff. Looking forward to that, Eugene.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much, Lisa. It's been great going through this today and hearing your thoughts. And I'm really looking forward to this special collection and staying in touch throughout the year.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Looking forward to it myself. All the best.
Take care. See you. Bye.
Bye.
That was Lisa Sullivan, guest editor of the JECME special collection on Expanding the Voices in CME-CPD, joining me to discuss this year's special collection. Journal of CME, previously known as the Journal of European CME, is the PubMed-indexed open access journal of the European CME Forum, publishing articles that address aspects of CME-CPD planning, design, delivery, assessment, and regulation across the health professions. More information can be found on the journal website, jcme.org. Thank you for listening, and join us for more episodes as we explore all things CME-CPD.